The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
My next guest is speaking to us from her home, the Polaris, an ocean-going catamaran. She spent nearly 6 years travelling around the world with her partner, and what started out as a sabbatical from work in August of 2018 has turned into a way of life, and the pair have visited everywhere from the Galapagos Islands to French Polynesia. Kate Ash Leonard, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. Thanks for having me on the show.
Where exactly are you?
Yeah, so it feels a bit surreal to be talking to you. We are actually at home, anchored off a remote island in northern Queensland. And the sun is just going down our time and the stars are coming out and there's no light pollution and there's nobody. It's completely uninhabited, the island. And there's just one other boat in the anchorage.
Now, you said we're at home, and that's the truth of it. You have made a boat your home for the last, 6 years?
Yeah, so August, it'll be 6 years. So we started this whole adventure in August 2018.
Now, tell me about your own background. Were you a sailor as a child?
Not at all. So I grew up just off the South Circular Road in the Portobello area. And my dad lives out around Dunleary, but as it happens, I was never anywhere near boats. But the connection really was my partner, Jim. So Jim has sailed his whole life. And yeah, I guess he kind of talked me into it. And I'm very glad he did.
Now, you took a sailing course in Brighton just to get your sea legs, I suppose. But when did the idea of actually effectively circumnavigating the globe come about?
Yeah, so, well, it was well before COVID. Around 2017, we actually met through work some years earlier. And we were both working on this project, and the project became a bit more remote. So we realized that we were often working from home, and we thought, well, why don't we look at actually making our home a boat and doing a short circumnavigation of, say, 2 to 3 years to take a sabbatical off work. And then sell the boat and come back. But that wasn't what happened in the end.
Now, the idea of actually throwing up your job and, you know, I don't know, you had a flat, but you kept the flat and rented it, but you had to buy a boat.
Yeah, I mean, so Jim sold a place that he had, and that was kind of how we were able to buy the boat. But yeah, I mean, once the idea was planted in my mind, actually, the way he tells the story is that I was kind of pushing the idea. He was kind of hesitant because he knew I wasn't a sailor. But I just thought, God, wouldn't this be an amazing adventure? So as you said, then, you know, him being a sailor, he insisted that I took like my competent crew. We did day skipper and it took off from there. And yeah, I just fell in love with the life on the water.
Now, there are many people who will sail around the Med during the summer, calm seas, or even around the Greek islands in the summer, calm seas. But you've been through all sorts of seas, I suspect.
Yeah, I mean, what I would say to anyone who's thinking of doing this, the way we did it was to kind of ease our way in gradually. So my first 9 months on the boat was spent in a marina in Sicily. Then my first big passage was an overnight to Greece. Then my next very big passage, we sailed through the Med, just the two of us. And then my next very big passage about 8 months later was sailing across the Atlantic. The Atlantic transit was very smooth and easy. And we actually spent around 2 years in the Caribbean. So that was where I saw the first glimpses of the frightening weather, as we had a few hurricane scares there.
So what was the most scary encounter that you had?
So I don't want to kind of scare people because I would say that the good things far outweigh the bad. But we had a real big fright around St. Vincent and the Grenadines when this tropical storm named Gonzalo, even though in St. Vincent and the Grenadines, we were technically south of the hurricane line, according to our insurance people. The storm was tracking directly for the island we were anchored off. And not only that, it was actually upgraded first to a second and then to a third category hurricane. But as it happened, we, you know, we held tight. We kept looking at the different weather models, and it ended up spinning well south of us, which is very unusual. Normally they go north. So we spent 5 stressful days just, you know, talking with our friends, the other sailors, coming up with different plans. But we got away with that one, but we were all ready to go out to sea and hove to and, you know, just hold on tight.
What about sea creatures that you've encountered? I mean, whales and sharks and exotic birds?
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the big attractions of this adventure. You know, we have these magical passages where we're, you know, under a sky full of stars, watching glowing phosphorescence. Sometimes you'll have, you know, dolphins swimming at night in the phosphorescence in your wake. We see a lot of dolphins. We've swam with humpback whales off Moorea in the Society Islands in French Polynesia. And we've been lucky enough to also swim with humpback whales in Tonga. Lots of manta rays, some of the most peaceful underwater creatures you can imagine. I'm not sure if you've heard of Fakarava. That's a coral atoll in the Tuamotus in French Polynesia. But there is a pass, which is where the current flows in and out of the coral atoll, and that attracts lots of sea creatures. And there's around 800 grey reef sharks that congregate there. And yeah, so we've swam with them on numerous occasions. It's quite a thrill.
Mm-hmm. We always see on our television news about how the world is being despoiled by pollution, where there are, you know, very few places on Earth that are uncontaminated. What has been your experience?
Yeah, so, I mean, in the Caribbean is absolutely full of plastic and litter, unfortunately. And a lot of the islands don't yet have the systems to dispose of their rubbish in the way that we might or that we should. As you go into the Pacific in French Polynesia, they dispose of their rubbish in a very sophisticated way. Because it's so remote, French Polynesia is actually the size of Western Europe, except without the landmass and population. The water's crystal clear. You find very little debris. In terms of the coral there, a lot of it was completely untouched. But as we go further west, and actually here in Australia and up in the Great Barrier Reef, there's terrible coral bleaching events happening all the time. It's really depressing. We also see the effects of, you know, sea levels rising. That's very apparent in a lot of the atolls that we visited.
Mm-hmm. How do you support yourselves on this great adventure? As you say, almost 6 years in August, so it must cost.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, that's a constant concern. One of the messages that I wanted to give today is just to encourage other Irish people to look into this. If it's something that you're really passionate about and could see yourself doing, don't just assume it's impossible. You know, we see people with huge boats spending an absolute fortune. We're kind of mediocre in that respect. We don't have a lot of disposable income. And then you see the opposite end of the spectrum, and there are people doing it on a shoestring. But, you know, it is expensive. There are things that come up, like, you know, paying for insurance costs money. You have to have your rigging replaced every 10 years or so. That's the you know, pieces of metal that hold up the mast, really important. And so we've made it work through basically picking up bits of remote projects. So Jim is an IT consultant, and, you know, we were actually stranded in St. Vincent and the Grenadines through an entire year of COVID. And he was being called up all the time by the guys that he was working for, saying, you know, can you do this 3-month project? Can you do this 6-month project? And I had been working kind of alongside him as a change manager. I'm now kind of moving into writing and freelance writing, and I do some journalism for sailing magazines. So between the two of us, we make it work. But I won't lie, it's never a given. And, you know, we're always concerned about where the next expense is going to come from.
Yeah, because boats are very expensive things to maintain. If something goes wrong, nautical parts tend to cost more than the parts similar to, say, an internal combustion engine on dry land. If you have one of those on sea, it'll cost much more to repair it than it would ever do on land. And I'm sure the same is true of any of the accoutrements that you need for your boat.
Yeah, no, you've hit the nail on the head there. And I think what you'll find is that, you know, long-term liveaboards, which is what I class us as, find a way to make it work by learning how to do the repairs themselves. So there are things that you have to pay for, like certain spare parts. But we try to do almost all the fixes ourselves. You know, Jim is, I'm not going to take credit for his work. He's the technical guy here, but he fixes everything. You know, he's in charge of our solar. He's in charge of our lithium batteries, our two Volvo Penta engines. He's in charge of all the electronics and plumbing. He really knows the systems. And by not bringing in people from the outside that, you know, are really looking to make money off you and then you're sailing on and there's no accountability, by keeping it in-house and by making sure we do it ourselves, we save a lot of money.
Now, you mentioned COVID and you were kind of becalmed for some of the period of the pandemic. But in spite of that, you've travelled some, what, 25,000 nautical miles?
Yeah, we just checked it today, 26,000 actually. yeah, so, you know, a big bulk of that would be crossing the Pacific Ocean. So from Panama to Australia is in and around 8,000 miles. And in total, it took us between 58, 59 days and nights to cross the entire Pacific. So we, you know, clearly stopped along the way, but our biggest passage ever, our longest passage, was from the Galapagos Islands to Nuka Hiva, which is in the Marquesas in French Polynesia. That was around 19 days and nights at sea, just the two of us doing 3-hour rotating watches. And yeah, to be honest, we love it. That's kind of why we're still doing this. We're well over halfway around the world. Our next big challenge is to cross the Indian Ocean and, you know, figure out which way we want to get back to the Med from there. But there are people we meet doing this that, you're kind of on their last legs. They're absolutely sick and fed up of it. But we can't get enough. I love long, long ocean passages.
So how long more will you stay at sea? Because I suspect adjusting to dry land might be a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, I mean, like I've been reflecting on this a lot, and I was back in Ireland in February and, you know, getting home and like reconnecting with the family, you know, on the land is a very important part of what we're doing, because, you know, without that, you know, we lose that connection. But I couldn't see us actually wanting to sell the boat and move into an apartment or a house again. You know, if needs must, we would do it. But at the moment, our mindset is to prolong this as long as possible. You know, we meet couples that have been sailing for 25, 30 years. It's no longer a finite circumnavigation. It's just the way they live, and they just happen to be, you know, nomadic. They happen to be moving, but it's their home and it's where they live. So yeah, hopefully for a long while. Yes.
And I reckon your family, probably some of them think it's a great adventure and envy you, and I'm sure others think you're absolutely mad.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I get the vibe that all of my family are kind of, you know, admire what we're doing, and they're certainly very supportive. My mom in particular would love to see me getting back to Europe as soon as possible, understandably, because it's so difficult to, you know, to have that same contact just over the phone and with time zone differences. But yeah, some people, your friends, have described what we're doing as mad, and I completely understand that. But to me, you know, given the chance to do this, I think I'd be mad not to.
Mad not to, rather than mad for doing it. We can follow you on your Instagram, SV_Polaris.
Yeah, absolutely. We're on some different, like we're on YouTube and Facebook, but SV_Polaris on Instagram is the one that I use all the time. So, you know, for anyone who wants to get a feel for what it's really like, or, you know, maybe other Irish sailors out there that I don't know about, link up with us through SV_Polaris, and yeah, we'd love to hear from you.
Kate Ash Leonard, look, thank you very much for sharing your great adventure with us, and have safe sailing. That's all I can ask.
Thanks very much, Pat. Thanks for having me on the show.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.